called to order the Industrial Education and Economic Development Finance and Policy Committee. Ms. Schaefel, will you take the roll?
Pawlowski.
Present.
Pawlowski, present. Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Keel.
Present.
Keel, present. Bierman.
Present.
Bierman, present. Bliss.
Present.
Bliss, present. Burkle.
Present.
Burkle, present. Edelson.
Present.
Edelson, present. Frazier.
Present.
Frazier, present. Hamilton.
Present.
Hamilton, present. Lislegard.
Lislegard, present.
Lislegard, present. McDonald. McDonald.
McDonald, here.
McDonald, present. Sandsted.
Sandsted, present.
Sandsted, present. Sundin.
Present.
Sundin, present. Mr. Chair, we have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Schaefel. Representative Sandell, do you have a motion for us?
I do, Mr. Chair. I've read the minutes and in consultation with Mr. Wirth, move their adoption.
Representative Sandell moves the minutes of the last meeting. Is there any discussion to that? Seeing no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, aye. Nay? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, we're going to start out. We've got a number of testifiers today, and the first on the list is Superintendent Joseph Brown, Fairmont Area Schools. He is no stranger to the legislature in many ways. His wife, Robin Brown, was in the legislature for a number of terms, and we remember her fondly from that area. So Superintendent Brown, please welcome to the committee and identify yourself for the record.
Well, thank you very much, Chairman Pawlowski, members of the committee. Good morning. I am Joseph E. Brown, Senior Superintendent at Fairmont Area Schools. And I have about a 6-minute testimony here, but I'll be glad to yield questions at the end. Just as Minnesota is currently experiencing a severe teacher shortage, it is expected that there will be a more serious shortage of skilled workers over the next 2 years, with carpenters, welders, electricians, and plumbers. Can you imagine what the fiscal impact is going to be on the Minnesota budget when 239,000 skilled workers retire in the next 24 months? Well, what is the problem? Why are students not taking vocational classes? Well, the answer is that many high schools in Minnesota have simply eliminated vocational programs with an increased emphasis on preparing students for a 4-year college experience. Schools have found it increasingly difficult to find certified vocational teachers. Schools have cut vocational programs due to lack of funding for up-to-date equipment and facilities. And we have also observed that many students do not have time during their regularly scheduled school day to take a vocational class. Due to the state and federal academic requirements that result in full high school schedules, many students do not have time during the regular school day, 8 to 3, to take a vocational class. Many of our top academic students are taking required core classes, multiple college in the schools classes, a foreign language class, and many of these students are in band, choir, or orchestra, and they simply have no time to take a vocational class. On the other hand, we have some students that are highly interested in vocational careers, but they have full schedules because they're taking core classes, sometimes more than once, remedial classes, and required courses. But what is the solution? Fairmont Area Schools, over the last almost 5 or 6 years now, we've implemented a summer welding academy class and a Saturday welding academy class, in addition to summer agriculture classes. Last year, we had 20 students taking a 15-week, 4-hour-a-day welding class on Saturdays. 11 of these students were from Blue Earth area, which is our football rival, 3 students from Grenada-Huntley East Chain, 2 students from Fairmont, and 4 adults. This class had 5 women and 15 men. We do have 20 welding booths. This year, we currently, right now, we have 12 students taking the Saturday welding class. 7 are adults in the community and 5 are students. And there are two bills that Chairman Pulaski referenced earlier, House File 1143 by Representative Bjorn Olson, who is our new state representative from Martin County, and Senator Julie Rose in Senate File 688, and I'll comment on those in just a bit. Each of these bills should have broad bipartisan support. They are supported by business and labor. They will have a positive impact on all parts of the state, rural and urban. You know, eventually most people are going to need a skilled worker to build or remodel their home, whether one resides on the Iron Range, in the metro, or greater Minnesota. Each of these bills will encourage school districts to recruit and retain vocational teachers that may be year-round employees. Minnesota is blessed with a variety of manufacturing plants that are crying out for skilled welders, turret lathe operators, carpenters, plumbers, and electricians. And I remember seeing a fiscal note on this bill that was introduced a couple of years ago. And I, as a former legislator myself, I really questioned the fiscal note because they put, I think, an $11 million price tag on it. And the reason why I challenge that is that, first of all, very few schools in Minnesota have comprehensive vocational programs with certified vocational teachers. There are very few teachers that are willing to teach classes in the evening or on Saturdays or in the summer. And there's a limited number of students that are willing to take any class outside of the regularly scheduled school day. Now, Fairmont, Minnesota is a very unique community. We have all three. We have a comprehensive vocational program. We have vocational teachers that are willing to teach year-round and outside of the regularly scheduled school day. And we have a lot of students that want to take classes when they can fit them into their schedule. I'm also suggesting that schools should also strongly consider hiring vocational teachers on a 12-month contract and compensate them accordingly. Too many vocational teachers quit teaching to pursue full-time employment in the skilled trades. Minnesota needs well-trained, vocational, certified teachers to provide the appropriate instruction for our students. The world's best workforce law requires that school students prepare students to be both career and college ready. The tiered teacher licensing system does allow school districts to hire a tier one vocational teacher that has 5 years of experience in the trades. For an example, Fairmont can hire a local plumber, a local electrician, a local HVAC employee who has 5 years in the trades, and we can employ them as a tier one teacher to teach our classes. Well, over the past 10 years, Fairmont Area Schools has developed the following vocational academies. We have a welding academy with 20 welding booths. We have an agriculture academy with a greenhouse and 40 apple trees that were donated by our local Rotary Club. We have an automotive academy with two lifts. We have a culinary arts academy, which just in the last year served lunch to both the Minnesota Supreme Court that came and heard a case at our high school, and President of the Minneapolis Federal Reserve Bank, Neil Kashkari, and former Justice Alan Page, who visited our school. And now we're implementing a construction trades academy. Just a week ago Tuesday, our local voters voted 67% yes vote to approve a $6,730,000 expansion of our vocational building. This will house a Johnson Controls HVAC lab, an expanded wood shop, and a construction and manufacturing lab where we can build houses. We will build houses for Habitat for Humanity. We have three houses lined up now to build, fish houses and tiny houses. You know, here's the deal. I'm a former teacher, former principal, now superintendent. But here's what's always bothered me. Schools are only in session 15% of the year. 85% of the time, our children are not in our schools. You know, if our high school burnt down again like it did back in 1970, I'd go to the local community. I said, I have this great idea. I want to build a new $75 or $80 million high school. I want to use it 15% of the time. I'd be laughed out. They said, that's silly. But we've done it for 110 years. And my thought is that the vocational programs need to be year-round programs. They should be available at night, on Saturdays, and in the summer. Finally, we always seem to have money for failure. And, you know, the extended time revenue that's currently part of state statute, once a student fails, we get more money. But if we have a student succeed, we don't get any extra money. And it's always seemed to bother me. Vocational classes are best taught in block classes of 2 hours or 4 hours each. And we have shown here in Fairmont that teachers and students are willing to take vocational classes on the weekend, in the summer, and at night. But currently, schools do not generate state aid because it isn't during the regular day. Now, Chairman Pulaski and members of the committee, we started working on this legislation 5 years ago. And I think I've been up to the legislature every year for the last 5 years. And we were talking about 5 years from now, we need to replace these workers. Then 4 years from now, now we have 24 months. 24 months to replace 239,000 skilled workers. I'm going to be 70 years old in a few weeks. Well, if I was a bricklayer, I'd be retired. And if I was an electrician, I'd probably be retired. And so as a baby boomer, we need to replace the baby boomers. And our current system of vocational schools, colleges, community colleges, four-year universities, and public high schools, we are not getting the job done. We need to bring us all together to focus on this serious issue. Now, years ago, all I was asking for that if we have a class on Saturday, can we generate state aid for that class? And the Department of Ed said, no, it has to be during the regularly scheduled school day. And so then we went with the approach of Senate File 688 and House File 1143, which said, well, can we generate extended time revenue for vocational classes? And then when we tried to get this bill passed a couple years ago, there were some legislators that liked the idea, but then they added STEM classes, science, technology, engineering, and math. And the more I think about it, skilled workers are not just the traditional carpenters or electricians. They're people that probably need some computer skills. They need to be strong in math and science and technology and engineering. And so it probably makes some sense to have both vocational and STEM classes included. But so we're trying to solve an issue here that it's not just for Fairmont. Thank goodness our school board, we have just a great school board. Three of our school board members have direct relationship with Mayo Hospital here in town. The other three folks are in the private sector also. And we just have a great school board. We have 22 college classes that are taught at our high school. We have a great band, choir, orchestra, speech, and drama department. And we have this wonderful vocational department. We are really a comprehensive high school, but in Martin County, there is no community college. We really are, in essence, we have become the community college of Martin County. And all we're asking for is a little bit of revenue. So, but it's not just for us, because we cannot provide 239,000 skilled workers. We need to make sure that this legislation, once it's passed, is available to all high schools in the state, so we can prevent an issue that's gonna hit us hard. With that, I'll stop, Chairman.
Representative Samstedt.
Chair and Superintendent Brown, thank you so much for that testimony. I'm wondering, can you talk a little bit about how the Fairmont academies are similar or different than the academy style? I think it's out of Alexandria.
You know, Alexandria, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative. We've actually visited Alexandria before. You know, Alexandria and us have some common interests. We both have 3M plants. Alexandria has, they have a lot of manufacturing in that area. And I always like to use the analogy, do y'all remember the Reese's Peanut Butter Cup commercial where you take the chocolate and the peanut butter, you put it together? Well, in my opinion, public schools cannot do it by ourselves anymore. We need the private sector heavily involved. And I think what's happened in Alexandria, they've had a great vocational program that they've developed, but it's been in partnership with the local business community. We have done the same thing. CHS, which has a soybean crushing plant in our school district, they recently gave us a $100,000 donation before we passed this legislation, before we passed our bond a week ago Tuesday. Kaler Automation is another manufacturing company here in town that gave us a donation. We visited 58 different businesses before the vote, and every single business that we approached agreed to sign on to an endorsement postcard for us. And but it just goes to show that schools in the private sector and the public sector have to join forces together. We have different programs than they do. I think we're probably heavier in welding maybe than they are. They've done some more work on construction. But and that's a good point that you're bringing up, is that not every high school needs to have the exact programs, because we're located in a heavily manufacturing and agricultural area. We're going to be concentrated on agriculture, automotive, welding, and construction trades, and culinary arts. They all tie together.
Representative Sandstedt.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent Brown, you mentioned that currently our students are in the classroom about, or in our schools, 15% of the year, 15% of the time. Hypothetically, if we were to if we were to be able to have our students graduate with some type of a degree in these trade areas, would the time that they're in high school going through a program like this be sufficient? Would Saturdays need to be included? What would need to be included to make sure they have the skill set and the proper safety measures all in place in order to graduate with a degree and have them go right into the work?
Great question.
Superintendent Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Great question. I'll give an example. Our welding academy, we teach four different levels of welding. And when at the fourth level, students get a college certificate. In the past, we were working with Riverland Community College in Austin. Now we're working with Minnesota West out of Jackson. They're a little bit closer than we are. But our students end up with a certificate. And we have a company that moved to town about 2 years ago. It's called Zierke Built Manufacturing, Zierke, Z-I-E-R-K-E. We currently have 14 of our recent high school graduates working for them full-time as welders. They're making a good living. They're 19 and 20 years old. They have no college debt, and they're driving a nicer car than I have. And they're just doing great. Now, our next phase, if you notice, our HVAC program, we're working with Johnson Controls. That's a two-year program where students take these classes for at least 2 hours a day. And if they can't fit it in the regular schedule, then what we plan to do is teach it during the summer. We'll plan to have a 12-week program where they maybe come 4 hours a day or 6 hours a day. But they'll actually get certified to be an HVAC engineer so that they can leave high school and actually go out and be able to design HVAC systems for buildings. And those are our two best models. The third one is, of course, our culinary arts. As you know, there's so many food programs. We have two full-time family and consumer science teachers. One is exclusively our culinary arts teacher. And there are so many students that love to get in there and prepare food, learn how to prepare food. And again, as I mentioned, they actually hosted the Supreme Court of Minnesota and the president of the Federal Reserve Bank two different times. They served them meals. And that's a great thing to do. But back to your question, there's no way possible, I don't think, in the 15%, and it's actually 14.7%, I rounded it up, but 15% of the time that our children are in a traditional school, there's not time. And here's another point I'll make. One thing we've learned at schools in the last year, students can learn anytime, any place. What is magic about 8 to 3? It's nothing. There's nothing magic about it, but we've done it for 110 years. And we can't afford to keep building these brand new high schools and have them being used from 8 to 3 and then lock the doors. We got to stop doing that. That's my opinion.
Representative Sandstedt.
Thank you.
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Superintendent Brown. I've heard your presentation before, and it's always been impressive. In the last session, we worked on the Innovation Research Zone legislation, and your welding academy and the proposals you had made for summer school were our model. But the $11 million fiscal note from the Department of Education sunk our ship, and we just couldn't get past that. Have you had a chance to talk with MDE and work with them and getting their support for the work that you're doing?
Superintendent Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Sandell, I have not directly worked with them this year. The cost-benefit analysis that I calculated, if you take 239,000 skilled workers out of the workforce, it's going to cost the state budget about $230 million of lost tax revenue. And, you know, I'm like Chairman Pawlowski. I'm a former high school government teacher. I'm not a math teacher. but 230 million versus 11 million. For every dollar you spend on this program, you're going to prevent $11 of loss. But if 2 years from now, if we don't do this, we're going to come back. The state's going to lose $230 million of revenue. You just will. We will. And I don't want to see that happen. So, no, I have not worked directly with them. You know, in the past, MDE has been reluctant to expand the program. But you know what's, here's what's funny. Once again, I made the comment about we always seem to have money for failure. You know, because of COVID, we have a lot of students that did not get exceptional grades this semester. And we, on March 1, we're starting an intensive after school program to make sure our high school kids stay on track to graduate. And this summer, we're gonna have an 8-week summer session for all of our students that are needing. And guess what? We're gonna generate money for that because they're behind. But if you do something successful, there's no money. It just drives me crazy.
Representative Sandow.
Well, thank you, Chair Pawlowski. Well, the three of us, Mr. Brown, the chair and myself have all taught social studies for many years. And you and I were at the banquet offered at the end of the year by the Minnesota Council of Economic Education. And they were a great organization and looking for help again. It doesn't take much of a study of economics to recognize how important this work is. And I certainly hope that we can support the work you're doing. Thanks very much.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Superintendent Brown, thank you for your testimony. It's very encouraging for the future of our children. Two questions. At what age are you exposing the kids to the trades? And then secondly, what's your secret sauce to finding your instructors and teachers to teach these great trades?
Superintendent Brown.
Superintendent Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, in seventh grade, we are a 7th through 12th grade high school, and E through 6 elementary. We have about 860 students in our 7th through 12 building. In 7th grade and 8th grade, students all take a required science, technology, engineering, and math class where they actually get into the wood shop. They design little cars. They design sometimes airplanes. They design, bridges that they do stress tests on. We actually want them to get into the vocational wing so that they can experience the different trades that we have and actually see people. And then, of course, in ninth grade is when they can start taking the classes that we've talked about. Seventh and eighth grade also, they also get a taste of the family consumer science. They get a taste of agriculture. So really starting as early as seventh grade. You know, we find that, as a former high school principal, I know this, that the ninth grade is probably the most important high school year. We find that if students get all their credits in ninth grade, there's almost 100% that that child is going to graduate on time. If a child falls behind by 2 credits in ninth grade, there's a slim chance they're going to make it. Well, we want to get kids excited right away in seventh and eighth grade that there's great opportunities. Only 35% of children in Minnesota go to a four-year school and graduate. That means 2/3 of our children do not. And there are so many wonderful jobs in our region that they can do that. And Representative, I apologize. What was the second part of your question?
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Second part of the question was, what's your secret sauce to finding good instructors and educators teaching these great grades?
Okay. Superintendent Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative. Our secret sauce. I've been in Fairmont. This is my 11th year as superintendent. I've hired 87 of the 125 faculty, mainly due to retirements because of the rule of 90. When people come to Fairmont, first of all, we're a QCOMP school. We're one of the first QCOMP schools in the state. And I've always been a big fan of QCOMP. And so our teachers are paid well. Our contract, we have our teacher contract, I'm a former union president myself, and I take pride in the fact that we have a really great teacher's contract. We have some clauses in our contract that if we ask you as a teacher to go back to school for any reason, but to get your special ed license, to get your vocational license, to get your work-based learning license, to get your college in the schools license, we pay the full cost. We pay the tuition, we pay the registration fee, and we pay the curriculum. All we ask in return is that you agree to teach for us for 5 more years. We've never had anybody leave. We're just a great, if you ever want to put a smile on your face, I would invite any of you to come down and visit Fairmont Area Schools. It's just a fun place to be. We have great faculty. People work together. We have a great administrative team. We have 2 co-principals of the high school. We have 2 co-principals of the elementary, and that's a model that's kind of unique. But we don't have principals and assistant principals. We have co-principals. And our cabinet works very close. We have a great school board. I will tell you that our school board has set aside significant dollars in our unassigned fund balance to support the vocational wing. And that's why we're willing to pay. When a teacher teaches a night class, a Saturday class, or a summer class, we pay them at their full hourly rate. And so if you teach a 60-hour class, 15 Saturdays, 4 hours apiece, you're going to get paid your regularly hourly rate. And once again, if you heard me mention twice, I think, in my opinion, in order to recruit and retain vocational teachers, we really need to put them on a year-long contract. They ought to be paid $80,000 to $100,000 a year, because if we don't, we're going to lose them to the private sector. And if we do, then we're not going to have skilled workers, and that's going to cause a financial deficit for the state, and we're trying to prevent that. We actually have a high school student who is a year and a half away from graduating from college. We've already promised him a job. He'll be one of our new vocational teachers in 18 months, and so we're growing our own. And again, that's, you have to be innovative and creative, and you have to be a little bit pushy. But anyway, that's the secret sauce.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you. Just quickly then, thank you, Mr. Chair, Superintendent Brown. You mentioned earlier that the private-public relationship is very important to success, and certainly I think most would agree with you. Are you bringing in some of those experts in the field, construction and heating and air conditioning, manufacturing, into your classroom as well, and instructing, or just for a one-day seminar? What's some
Superintendent,
of the things you
Superintendent, Superintendent Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative, we've already done that in building and automotive. We brought the local community experts in to work with our students. Let me tell you a quick story. My first year in Fairmont, I had to cut $1.5 million from the budget. I cut 40 jobs. I didn't cut any teachers, but I cut administrators, secretaries, cooks, custodians. We cut 40 people because we had to get our budget correct. We're in great shape now financially. My second year, though, our welding teacher came to me and said, Joe, can I get $10,000 of additional money so I can buy wire feed and gas for my welding class? I went to the school board and they said, no, we just cut $1.4 million. Go out and raise it locally. So I sent letters out to 15 different companies, and I asked if they would be willing to adopt a welding booth for $1,000. McNeilius, Dodge Center, ADCO over in Jackson. They all came forward and they donated money to us. In return, we put a sign up in each welding booth that this welding booth was donated by McNeilius. And here is their address, their website, and their phone number. And then we let those businesses that donated to us, they get first crack at our kids. We let them come into our class. They help teach class. They also pass out job applications. They also recruit our kids. And so we're a very strong pipeline of our high school to job, and which is very important for those individuals that do not plan at this time to go to higher education.
Representative McDonald, said.
Superior, thank you, Superintendent Brown, and thank you, Mr. Chair. Awesome. Keep up the good work.
Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Brown, for being here today. You don't have to have us come to Fairmont to put smiles on our faces. We like hearing what you're talking about. It's really exciting what's happening down in Fairmont. Related to Representative McDonald's question, my question was whether or not Fairmont went through a period of reducing vocational classes, or has it always been strong in your school?
Superintendent Brown.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, here's the history of Fairmont. About 30 years ago, Fairmont was, we had Fairmont, it was called Martin County Vocational Academy or school. And at that time we had lots of little high schools in our county. We had East Chain, we had Grenada, we had Ceylon, we had three schools in Martin County West. They all had little bitty high schools, and they would send students to us for the afternoon. They'd come half the day. They came for business classes and vocational classes. Well, when Martin County West consolidated, they put three small schools together, Grenada, Huntley, East Chain, they did that. Truman has only 200 kids in their whole district. Ceylon actually consolidated with Fairmont. But during those years, there are two things happened. One, those schools tried to keep their own students. They didn't want to lose the revenue, so they didn't send students in. Second of all, vocational funding didn't increase. And if you remember, there was a time with the previous, because of the economics of Minnesota, there were 6 years in a row where K-12 schools received 0% increase in funding. 0%. Former Governor Tim Pawlenty visited our school the year that he was running in the primary for a re-election. And he came and visited the school, and I was showing former Governor Pawlenty around our school. He said, "Well, Joe, why did schools cut vocational programs?" I said, "Well, Governor, I don't know if you remember, but the first 2 years that you were governor, we got 0% increase. The third and fourth year, we got a 0% increase. And the fifth and sixth year that you were governor, we got a 0% increase. And during that time, schools had a cut. And you can't cut math, science, social, language, arts because they're required. In this district, you're not touching the band, the choir, or the orchestra. And you're not going to touch our 23 sports teams. You're not going to, no. So what's left to cut? Vocational. And vocational is expensive. It's expensive for two reasons. One, the equipment is expensive. And number two, the class sizes are smaller. We try to keep all of vocational classes 20 or less because of safety reasons. You can't put 30 kids in a welding class. And so, and then the last thing, as I mentioned, is that there was this huge emphasis that every child had to go to a four-year college. Well, I have six children that are all in their 30s now. My most successful child is a cosmetologist down in Clear Lake, Iowa. She makes more money than the other five kids combined. I'm serious. And she went to school for 14 months. She's 34 years old, owns her own house, and flies an airplane. She's just terrific. Anyway, we had that. And then also, if you study the Fairmont area, we have so many different manufacturing companies. We have two ethanol plants. We have a soybean crushing plant. We produce 1.9 million hogs every year. By the way, they cut agriculture. We did not have agriculture. We did not have an FFA program until I came 11 years ago because of funding. They cut the FFA program. So we have thousands of acres of corn and soybeans. We produce 1.9 million hogs. We have two ethanol plants and a soybean crushing plant and no agriculture class. Well, that also changed. I think I gave the committee information about that. My second year, we had a group of business people that came and said, "What would it take to reinstate the agriculture program?" And I said, $300,000 in cash. And they said, "What would you do with that?" I said, "Well, we'll recruit an ag teacher. We'll set up his or her lab. We'll run it for 3 years. We'll pay for the FFA program. And if it's successful, we'll take it over." This was the week before Thanksgiving. And I thought, "I'll see you guys in a couple of years." Well, they came to me in January. They gave us a check for $308,000. And they apologized. They said, "Joe, we're sorry it took 6 weeks. But, you know, we had some people that were down south. It was Thanksgiving. We had Christmas. People were down in Florida. We're sorry it took 6 weeks to raise $308,000. You know, I'm willing to take money from anybody if it's for a good cause and if it helps our kids and helps our state of Minnesota. And I'm not afraid. I just don't understand why public schools don't reach out more to the private sector. The private sector needs us, and we need the private sector."
Representative Beal.
Mr. Chair, thank you. That answer brought up a lot of other questions, but I'm going to stay focused and ask you one quick one, and then I'll let others go ahead. So this is in regards to early in your statement about your class, you mentioned that there were some adults participating as well. So are those through Community Ed and Rec, and do they pay a fee for that, or how does that work?
Superintendent Brown.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative. That's a great question. When we open our vocational classes to adults in our community, we do require one thing. They have to do a background check. They have to pay for a background check. In the past, for welding classes, we charged $250 for a 60-hour class. This year, though, we increased it to $300. And so $300 for a 60-hour class, that's really cheap when you consider what it costs to go to a vocational school. But all we want to do is cover our costs. And then I'll tell you a quick story. We've now run that class for 5 Saturdays. A week ago, one of the women taking the class, one of the female adults taking the class, she went out to Zerke Built Manufacturing, applied for a job, took the welding test, and beat everybody that took the welding test that day, and they hired her on the spot. Now, she's still going to complete our class, but there's a great example. You know, they paid $300, or she paid $300, and she got a job, and the job pays well. Zerke Built Manufacturing is a great company in town. They employ about 70 employees. They could use more. And so, yeah, we do charge tuition for the school districts. If you're one of our students, we don't charge you at all. And if you're from a neighboring district, we do charge, in the past, we've charged $250. We may increase that to 300, but at this point, we're trying to be very, because of COVID, we're trying to be very, very low key.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Brown. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Frazier. Representative Frazier, we're getting some type of feedback. Yeah, we're still getting some type of feedback when you speak. That there's an echo.
You're gonna have to come back.
That's getting better. Still a problem. We may have lost Representative Frazier for the time being. Well, while he's trying to come back, I want to remind members of a couple of things that the Superintendent Brown said. Senate File 688 and House File 1143 have been around for at least 5 years. This is the third legislative session that the chair has been working on this issue. This is the second legislative session that the House has dedicated a committee to focusing just on this topic. Of how we can get hands-on learning, how we can get a student to graduate, not just with a traditional degree, but also with an employable skill set. In 2019, in Winona, the mini session of October 2nd, 3rd, and 4th, one part of that was focused on this topic. It really is time that we have to act. Superintendent Brown, until we get Representative Frazier back, your fiscal note on this bill, you said was $11 million. We've had difficulty with fiscal notes before. And you probably told us this, but I'm going to have you repeat it. What do you think would be a more practicable number other than $11 million to implement Senate File 688 and House File 1143?
You know, that's a great question, Mr. Chairman. I would suggest, you know, one way to, and again, I'm kind of a fiscal conservative, and one way to consider this is maybe what the legislature does is simply say, you know, for year one, we're going to appropriate $2 million, but it only will go to schools that currently have programs that are doing classes outside the regular school day. I don't know if there's another school in Minnesota that does this. I know that there are three schools in our conference right now that are pursuing this. I think you heard from the New Ulm superintendent, Jeff Bertrang. They're doing a great program up there. Wyndham also recently built a vocational wing onto their school. And I think St. Peter is doing something similar. And so there are a handful of schools that are doing this. To my knowledge, we're the only ones that are doing it outside of the regular school day. That could be one way to limit this. And then, you know, I think the fiscal note, when they wrote it, they said if every single school did it, and every high school senior did this, and every high school person did, well, that's not going to happen. I'm telling you right now, that's not going to happen. So you figure, I figured that if, well, figure this for a minute. Let me get a calculator. You know, if I have 20 students taking a class and I charge them $300 a piece, that's $6,000. That $6,000 just about covers the cost of the teacher and the supplies. And in fact, I think if I did this correctly, I think I'll actually, Mr. Chairman, I'll send you a note that I actually calculated a year ago based on the old formula, the state aid. I think I calculated that if you did a 60-hour class and paid a teacher, maybe paid a, we also pay a paraprofessional to be in there with the teacher, with 20 new people welding, that with the wire feed and the gas, it's about $8,000 for a class. We have an aviation class that we teach here also. We have four flight simulators that students use, and they learn how to, they get their ground school class done. I forgot to mention that. We do not have an airplane, nor will we have one. For about let's say $10,000 a class, you teach 20 kids a trade. So you get, you know, $10,000 divided by, you know, 20 students, that's $500 to trade somebody how to do a trade. And let's say you take, let's say there's 1,000 kids that do that times $500, that is $500,000. So maybe one thing to consider is maybe a bill is passed. And again, I know your March forecast isn't there. Your January January revenue came in higher than expected. I think, and you know, there's parts of Minnesota that I think are doing really well because of all the different uniqueness that we have. Our agriculture prices are up, corn and soybean prices are up. 3M is doing great. A lot of our hospitals are doing well. And maybe just setting aside $1 million for a quote unquote pilot project, or maybe $1 million each year for the biennium, maybe $2 million. But to make that available, you'd have to then demonstrate that you've actually done a class, that you've had it outside of the regular school day, and report how many students you've actually trained. That would be very appropriate. I know there's three or four schools in my conference of 14 school districts that would be willing to do something like that.
Superintendent Brown, I'm going to have a draft done of a potential amendment that we might use in this, hopefully we can use it in this committee to do exactly what you say based on Senate File 688 and House File 1143. And we'll focus it in the way you want to craft it, only the schools that are actually doing it. I'm not terribly fond of pilot programs, but we can call it something so that we can focus the money and then get a report back on how successful. And I do think this is just going to be successful. It's not going to be a full report on if we need this, we need to do that. So we'll work with you. I will work with you on that. And Mr. Wirth will be calling you, and we're going to have that drafted up. And I know Representative Sandell has already worked on this too. And the vice chair does need something more to do than move the minutes. So we'll give him a task that's a little more complicated than that. And I think Representative Frazier, are you back with us?
Yeah, I think so. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yes, much better.
All right. Thank you, Chair. Superintendent Brown, I just wanted to say I love the story that you told with your tour with the former Governor Pawlenty. And I think what it highlighted is the fact that we need to make sure that we're funding our programs, specifically education, adequately so that we don't run into issues down the line where we've seen the devastation of the cuts that we have to make to education. So thank you for sharing that story. And one of the things I will say, I really like when we're having discussions about these programs. I think I've shared a few times on the on this committee that my high school had a vocational component to it. In fact, years after I graduated, it did switch to the Career Academy focus. And it provides for those certificates at 5 and 6 year programs, and the students come out certificates in particular areas and go right into those trade careers and other careers as well. So I really like the program. I think we need to have this. I think you hit on it in your opening statements. This is something that is impactful statewide. So I'm hoping to see this be successful and hoping to see that we can expand it as well. And to the other point, my question is, you mentioned that we should hire these teachers year round. Currently right now, we can do that through the tiered system because those tier one teachers are not on, they're not tied to the CBA like our other teachers are. So I guess the question is that just a funding mechanism that prevents us from doing that now or prevents you from doing that now?
You know, I don't think so. I think a school district could hire a teacher year round. What we've done to, thank you, Mr. Chairman, Representative Frazier, what we've done is that we've simply have said that if you teach classes outside of the regular school day, then we will pay you the hourly rate of what you're currently making. So if you're a vocational teacher and you're at the top end of your salary schedule making $70,000 or $75,000 a year, we divide that by 184 contract days, divide that by 8 hours, that's your hourly rate. And if you teach a Saturday class of 60 hours, we actually give them 75 hours because we give them an hour and a half. No, we give them 1 hour prep time for each of the 4 hours they teach. And so they're getting paid for 75 hours of their daily rate of pay. And we have a very close relationship with our collective bargaining unit. One of the little things that I do as superintendent is that every year that we have an audit report, I bring in the three top negotiators of the teachers union. They sit with the members of the board and they get briefed at the exact same time of our financial status. So they know exactly where we are financially. But working with our local teachers union, as long as we pay the hourly rate, they think it's great. We actually had a chemistry teacher last year teach a magnetism and electricity class at night. She taught Thursday nights, 4 hours a night for a semester, and she got paid her hourly rate to do that. And we've actually set aside, our school board has set aside money to pay for these courses that are taught outside of the regular school day. So it's not like, you know, here's the deal. It's not that Fairmont's pleading poverty because I can't. We're in great shape financially, and we have a great school board that supports all of our comprehensive programs. I'm looking at this from a standpoint. I've been in Minnesota. I'm a Minnesota resident for 28 years. I am from a southern state. I won't mention that it's Iowa, but I've been here for 28 years. My wife and I love being here in Minnesota. I'm really concerned about the future of our state. And that's why I keep pushing this. And it's like, this is the year to do it. I really agree with the chairman that we got to get something done and let's do it now. It's the right thing to do. It's the right time.
Representative Frazier.
Thank you for sharing that. And I will say I have been on a Fairmont a couple of times and I have enjoyed my experience down there.
Representative Frazier, anything else?
That's all.
Members, I don't see anyone else with any more questions. Superintendent Brown, we're going to get back to you, and then we'll work on a couple of drafts here of what we might be doing. And Representative Sandell, I'll probably put as the point person on this. So I want to frame this around the way you explained it to us, and then we'll see what we might get as a fiscal note, not just from you, but we have our own legislative now fiscal notes. So I'm hopeful that it will be dramatically less than $11 million and more toward the number that you're stating. So thank you, Superintendent Brown. And again, give my regards to your wife.
I will, Mr. Chairman, can I add one more thing? You know, Superintendent Brown, to my knowledge, the Department of Ed has never done an actual survey to find out what vocational programs do all schools currently have. And I think that would be a nice directive of your committee to require the MDE to do a quick survey to find out what classes are you currently teaching and what programs do you currently have. Because when you do a fiscal note, you got to take a look at what programs are out there. It's not everybody's going to do it. Let's take a look at the real number. Anyway, I'm sorry.
No, Superintendent Brown, that's an excellent idea, and I saw Representative Sandell taking notes. Mr. Wirth, I know you're listening in. Mr. Wirth, make sure you take a note of it, and we will also make that request in a draft. So thank you, Superintendent Brown.
Thank you so much. Thank you, committee.
Members, next on the agenda, a presentation from the Minnesota Virtual Academy. I have Superintendent Abraham. Houston Public Schools is up first. Superintendent, welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
Hello, I'm Corinne Abraham, superintendent at Houston Public Schools, and one of our schools is Minnesota Virtual Academy.
All right, proceed.
Okay, and today with me, I also have Leslie Lewandowski, and I will, with the chair's permission, let her introduce herself.
All right, Ms. Lewandowski, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Hi, good morning. My name is Leslie Lewandowski, and I am the College Readiness Education Program Coordinator for Minnesota Virtual Academy.
Proceed.
Chair, we did have a slide deck. Is that something that we can use, or should I just speak to it?
Superintendent, I think Mr. Wirth will get that up for us.
Thank you.
And while he's doing that, I did represent the Houston area for 10 years. So I'm very acquainted with the Houston schools and the innovative use that they've made of technology over that time. And I think in a way it saved the school district, how they've used technology, not just in this fashion, but in other ways. So if you haven't been down there, the Houston Hoedown, I'm gonna have to give a plug for that. And the Owl Center is also very good.
And just so the committee understands, at Houston, we've got our traditional brick and mortar school where we serve pre-K through grade 12. We also have an alternative school, and then we have the Minnesota Virtual Academy as well. So we really try to do a little bit of everything. What we're talking about today is our STRIDE Career Prep Program at Minnesota Virtual Academy. And this program is a program within the high school at MNVA, and it is a career tech program that allows students, while they're students, to get exposure to a variety of different pathways of career tech, and it is all online, and it connects them with career fields, and it helps us get our mission statement of discovering, developing, and achieving the potential within all learners. And actually, Chair Pulowski was on the committee to help us draft that mission statement years ago. Next slide. These are the current pathways, and I will let Ms. Lewandowski explain the pathways to you.
Ms. Lewandowski.
Thank you, Chair. We do currently have four pathways at Minnesota Virtual Academy in the areas of human and health services, business and marketing, information technology, and then within manufacturing and trades, it is our operating engineers, heavy equipment, pre-apprenticeship readiness pathway. Each of these pathways were chosen based on industry need around the state of Minnesota, as well as high interest level for students that are taking each of these coursework.
Within our STRIDE Career Prep Program, as Superintendent Brown was saying, these do support the world's best workforce. Not every student wants to go to a four-year college, but if in Minnesota we really are going to claim that we are developing the world's best workforce, we need to do that. And these are, the prep program is a way to really help prepare students for those careers outside of high school. Next slide. Okay, at this point, I'm going to put on my superintendent hat as a brick and mortar school. As a superintendent of a small school in Houston, I don't have the ability to offer all of the pathways because of staffing, because of building. You heard Superintendent Brown talk about schools such as Wyndham building on a new tech wing. We can't afford to do that, nor do we have the student population to fill that type of wing. And so these MNVA classes allow our children to virtually get out of the valley and to really find different ways to get to their interest levels, because we can't do it all. Okay. And here are the current numbers we have in our career prep program. And Chair, if you will introduce Ms. Lewandowski again.
Ms. Lewandowski.
Thank you, Chair. So we currently are serving students from across the state of Minnesota in all of these pathways. You can see the numbers under each of the areas, the pathways that we have to offer. We have many counties that have one student participating and some counties that have multiple students that are participating. The bottom one is undecided. What we have found through our STRIDE Career Prep program is that there are students in every district that are really unsure of what it is that they want to go into, what fields that they're interested in. They may not want to commit at this point in time to one of the four pathways we have. So we support those students as well, connecting them to other pathways such as criminal justice. There is a lot of interest in that science, and so then addressing those issues as well that they cannot get in their own traditional brick and mortar schools, and so are able to connect them with college programs and other resources within their local communities that can help support them as they continue their education in those areas.
What we have here is basically a heat map as far as where our enrollment is. And I talked about the fact that as a small district, we can't offer the career tech programs, that wide variety of them. But you'll see in this heat map that the majority of our students actually are coming from the metro area. So even though this is a great benefit to the schools in Greater Minnesota, it also benefits the metro area schools as well. Because as a superintendent, it doesn't pencil out to offer a class to just four students because it's just way too expensive to do that. So Mr. Wirth, if you could, so there's Health and Human Services. With Health and Human Services, students can get all of the coursework necessary for a CNA, the Certified Nurse Assistant. With the next map, with Business and Marketing, there's other certifications they can get. And the next one, I know we're short on time, so and here's the operation engineer pathway as well. Right now it's all virtual, but then we work out a time at the end of the program where the students do get some hands-on work as well. And the next, this really does remove barriers. It removes the barriers of having just one or two students in a district that are interested in an area. And so we get that economy of scale by having them be able to log on and virtually meet with other students of similar interests. We also have articulation agreements. And so those students are earning some college credits as they are in high school. It's a great partnership. And it also allows for that expansion within some districts that have some pathways started, but they don't have their pathways completed. And once again, if Ms. Lewandowski would be recognized to speak on that one.
Ms. Lewandowski.
Thank you, Chair. We have in the past month or so had conversations with several school districts in some of our smaller communities who are interested in the coursework that we have to offer because it directly aligns to pathways that they've been trying to offer within their districts. And by having their students participate in one or two of the courses within our pathways, it actually allows them to complete one of their pathways, which supports then their Perkins funding coming in. And so not only can students take the full pathway with us, but we are able to add that value to districts in order for them to be able to connect into the pathways that they've been wanting to and have scalable students in, but then can share that with them. Thank you.
Here we're getting at the challenges. Right now, when I do my budget, I am basing it on that dollar amount that comes in for each student. Every student that takes a class online at another program, that's money that leaves my budget. And so it really is pitting those schools against schools. And so that loss of state aid does provide a disincentivation for that participation in the online classes. and also licensing. The question was asked of Superintendent Brown, how you find those licensed teachers. Let me tell you, that one is difficult. And if you've got a CTE program that with just one or two classes, no teacher can afford to just be on a 0.14 or a 0.28 contract if you're on a 7-period day. It's just financially not feasible for someone to do that. And it's not feasible for a school to have a 1.0 full-time teacher equivalent if there's not the student mass to actually fund that. The other one here is that the stigma, there are some procedures developed in some schools that make it prohibitive for students to take these classes. And once again, if Ms. Lewandowski could be recognized.
Ms. Lewandowski.
Thank you, Chair. Again, because I work directly with the schools, in our conversations, we have run into several situations where counselors have come to us with students that would be a great fit for specific pathways. We've been having a lot of conversations around our operating engineers apprenticeship readiness pathway. But once that information gets to administrators and superintendents, they are encouraged to not register students into those programs because of it. We have had one school district within the last 3 weeks that actually told a student that if they participated in these courses, that they would not be able to participate in graduation and get a diploma from their home brick and mortar high school because of it. So that turned that family away from registering into that pathway because every student, as they get to be a senior in high school, wants to be able to participate in those life events of graduation, and they weren't willing to take that away from him.
Next slide, please. We don't want to come to you with just problems without providing some potential solutions. Once again, this is for the Stride Career Prep that is a high school class. It's any students in grades 9 through 12. We do have exploratory classes in grade 8, but this is not about that. This is just for the Stride program in high school. One thing we could do is to identify a different funding source to replenish the cost to the districts so that they don't disincentivize the students from taking these career tech options online. Or developing those industry partnerships. If there was some way to incentivize industry partners to once again partner with the school, maybe having a dollar for dollar match for what the industry provides, or having a tax incentive for the industry to actually partner with us. We have been developing a partnership with Local 49 for the heavy machinery pathway, but as a mom, those four pathways, I look at them almost as four children. And right now we've got an industry partner for one of our children, but we don't have the industry partnerships for the other three. And I want to make sure that all four of the pathways are treated equitably. Okay, so why is this critical? I loved what Superintendent Brown was talking about as far as traditional schools can't do it all. He's absolutely right. The smaller schools can't provide all of these pathways. And so as an online program, we do provide that economy of scale so we can have one or two students. If you remember the heat maps, we have a collection of students across the state, and together they form a full class. And we can provide those pathways that it's not financially feasible in a smaller school to do, but even in the heat maps, the metro schools also are participating. It also allows for the resident schools to retain their students. I talked about dollars leaving for students taking online classes. With PSEO, post-secondary enrollment options, every time a student leaves for a post-secondary enrollment option class, that's also dollars leaving. So this is a way for the students to stay in the school, and if the dollars could stay,
then it would be a way to really expand the career tech options for students across the state of Minnesota. Next slide. Okay. I know we were short of time, so we went a little faster than what we had planned, but if you have any questions, there's our contact information. Everyone will be getting this slide deck. So if you wanted to look through it more at your leisure or to click on the link to see what our offerings are. But at this point, with the chair's permission, I will take questions.
Representative Lissigard.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just think this might be a good opportunity to interject that in an effort to hold school districts harmless and give the students and the families an opportunity to choose a pathway, I will be introducing a bill that will designate $100,000 to the Department of Labor that will allow the Minnesota Virtual Academy to offer these programs at no cost to the school districts. So I just wanted that to get out there. The bill will be coming forward, and you know, I don't want to call it a pilot program, but it is a program that will allow the state to see this model work. That will be coming, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lissigard, could you have that bill sent to us first?
I will do that, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Ms. Lewandowski, when we had talked earlier, you had mentioned some of the diversity in these programs that was unique. And I don't mean diversity necessarily by color or culture, but by gender. Can you repeat for the committee what you told me?
Yep. So thank you, Chair. So when we started specifically the heavy equipment pre-apprenticeship or the operating engineers pathway, we had anticipated, you know, 7 to 14 kids in our first cohort of class. We ended up having over 50 students in that first cohort. And of that cohort of students, 15% of the students that registered were female, which is a huge number of students in that first cohort to be female. On most publicly funded projects, there is a goal of 20% of female workers on site. And so for us to be at that 15% rate was really a positive thing. What we're seeing is females specifically in some of those non-traditional career areas feel more comfortable, it seems like, taking a course in a virtual setting instead of in that brick and mortar space, because it allows them a little bit of security as they're exploring and getting into that industry. And we've got some great female leaders coming out of that pathway.
Thank you. Members, are there any other questions? I don't see anyone's hand up, but I might not be able to see it on my screen, so. No one else has any questions? Thank you, both of you. And we have one more person on the agenda. Jason George, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Jason George, business manager for the Operating Engineers Local 49, represent more than 14,000 heavy equipment operators in this state. And South Dakota and North Dakota. Thanks for this opportunity to share our program. You heard a little bit about it in the previous testimony, and we're happy to partner with the folks from Minnesota Virtual Academy to make this happen. I'm going to start my comments by playing a quick 90-second video that explains the program and a lot better than I can. That is, if I can pull off the technology, Mr. Chair. It's a big if at this point, so give me 1 second here. I'm going to try to do this real quick.
Mr. George, we've had challenging problems already today, so just proceed.
Hold on 1 sec, Mr. Chair. Can you hear that?
Are you in high school?
Yes.
Good.
Are you interested in taking elective classes that will show you what the industry is really like? Minnesota Virtual Academy and Local 49 have partnered up to offer you courses toward becoming an operating engineer. High school students can enroll online full or part-time at MNVA to access operating engineer courses as part of their traditional school day. This is available to any student grades 9 through 12 enrolled in a Minnesota school district. The program includes four semester courses that give an overview of skills needed to successfully navigate the requirements of the local 49 apprenticeship program. You will learn construction exploration, basic grade in construction math, construction equipment fundamentals, and basic maintenance of mobile equipment. You can take these classes anywhere at any time, on your schedule at your convenience. The courses offered count towards your high school elective classes with potential for college credits. If this is right for you, you will be better prepared and ready to enter the local 49 apprenticeship program, knowing your options for your future and potential in this diverse industry. If you decide not to become an operating engineer, that's okay too. You took the time to explore, learn, and discover what's out there. Click the link below and get enrolled today.
Mr. Chair, thanks for letting me do that. I think that explains a little bit overview of the program better than I could. I also like to share a few thoughts about why we decided to do this. The main reason was workforce recruitment. I think it's been said in the committee so far that we face some challenges recruiting new workers to our industry. And we see those challenges every day as we're trying to fill jobs for contractors and train folks up for the next generation. We've had struggles in the past of getting in front of and getting in high schools. Our old approach was to try to basically beg them to allow us to come and present and sit at a table and talk to high school students about our career path. And, you know, trying to explain to a young person in 30 seconds when you have them at a table in a big group setting, you know, the advantages of becoming an operating engineer is difficult. And for a long time, we weren't allowed in to a lot of places. The push was for college. That was, you know, all day, every day, college. And our careers were considered, unfortunately, if you couldn't make it in college, you went into the trades. And that's just done such a disservice to kids, honestly, and our state, that approach. So I'm glad that that led us to think of a different avenue. And our sister local in Wisconsin did this about 5 years ago, and I found out about it and talked to them and really thought this was the path forward. This is a game changer. It allows us direct access to students. It allows students to make up their own mind and get information on their own and explore this career opportunity while getting high school credit. And it's just, to me, a game changer for how we move forward. That's why we did it, to get in front of these kids and give them an opportunity to learn and give us an opportunity to explain the career to them. We also wanted to acknowledge that we've invested a lot in this ourselves. This is us investing our own, the union's money, the contractor's money in this. A lot of it is that. I've hired a full-time person to help get this person off this program off the ground, among other workforce initiatives that she's working on. Jenny Winkler is her name. She's doing a great job for us and really creating these programs and getting them off the ground to give kids an opportunity to learn about our career. In addition, we're also part of this program is going to be partnering with our training center, which we have 400 acres in Hinckley that's completely privately funded by our contractors and our membership. Kids that are in this program eventually are going to get to go there and do some hands-on training. In the summer, we haven't figured out that piece yet, but there will be a hands-on component to it, either simulators or some instructor training at our training center. So that's another investment that we're making. We just think this is also an important step in helping us reach our equity goals. As been highlighted, the numbers are looking pretty good so far, but we got room to improve. If we're going to improve the equity numbers in this program and in our union, we need more cooperation from Twin Cities school districts, quite frankly. Ms. Lewandowski pointed out the challenges that we have in terms of some school districts not promoting this program or, you know, really discouraging students from taking it. I'd like to see that change. I realize why, you know, they have a significant issue there with the funding, and I think Representative Listigard's bill is critically important to help address that. But we also need some cooperation. That issue needs to get fixed. There can't be a barrier for students in the Twin Cities that don't have any experience in construction or our trade to learn about it. That's a shame. So I hope that your committee and the legislature will take a serious look at that this year and help us fix that to eliminate that barrier. And then I hope we get more cooperation from the Twin Cities school districts to start promoting this once that barrier is lifted. Just want to talk a little bit about those numbers. Actually, you know, what Leslie pointed out, that 15% of the students in the initial cohort were women. 7% were people of color. Just to give you an idea of where we are at in our current apprenticeship program with apprentices that are active right now, we have 313 active apprentices, 17% are people of color, and 11% are women. In 2020, we had 140 total applications that met the prerequisites. For us, that's a high school diploma, 18 years old, and a driver's license at a minimum. Of those applicants, 15% were people of color and 16% were women. So we're lagging a little bit behind in this program, and I think that's due to the challenges that we've outlined in the Twin Cities in particular. So wanted to talk about, you know, we've touched on the fact that budgets are tight and the reasons for some of the difficulties in recruitment, but also it's we're encouraged. The first cohort started out with 52 folks, I think it was, and I think the updated numbers are the second semester here, we're up to 107. So it's doubled in one semester. And this thing is starting to grow. We're starting to get a lot of interest from school districts around the state. Again, I think if we can address this funding issue, I think this could really take off. I think it would be a big benefit to the state. A couple other last points I wanted to make. One is I couldn't emphasize more. I wanted to give you a sense for what we're talking about here in terms of a job. Or it's not a job, it's a career. And what that means to a person. We're talking about if you get into our trade, a career that provides you with family health care with no premium. We're talking about a career that provides you a pension and a defined contribution plan so you have a secure retirement. We're talking about a career that has better than family sustaining wages. You can raise a family doing this for a living. We're talking about a career that when you get into our program, not only do you not have any debt, you actually make money while you learn. These are wonderful, life-changing opportunities. I have seen people's lives change myself. I know people that were working at McDonald's that are in our union now that have completely changed the trajectory of their family history by getting one of these jobs. So I couldn't emphasize enough the importance of you all taking the time to invest in making this happen. One last point, I'd be remiss if I didn't point this out. I don't want to turn this into this, but it's an important point that I want to make. There can't be these careers, and it's pointless to push for people to be in these careers if there are no jobs. And I think you all need to really think about that. Seriously. Jobs in infrastructure are critically important to the state, not only rebuilding the state, providing energy, providing products, providing resources, development of natural resources. These are what our men and women do, building roads and bridges, mining, pipelines, renewable energy, all of it. If we don't push and support those jobs, there's no point to this conversation whatsoever. So I just want to also make that connection for people. I think it's lost sometimes, and it's an important one. So I'll probably stop talking now. I think I've covered the points I wanted to talk to you about, and I'm happy to stand for any questions.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to complete some of the thoughts there that the testifier may or may not be aware of. The other craft unions, of which I am a member of, we're always pursuing the proper people to train and provide them with skill sets to go on and for a career in the construction fields. But just a reminder to the committee here that the two entities that provide the most vocational training for people in the United States, the first one is the United States military, and a lot of skills are acquired there during basic training and other trainings. But and then the second one is the North American building trades, and the testifier is a part of that organization too. But I'd like to just touch on what my organization has done in the past and what they're looking for in the future with no cost to the state of Minnesota. Okay, we have cross training several different disciplines within the painters and allied trades, crafts, glazing, drywall, industrial painting, that type of thing. But that wasn't enough to establish a training program here. And so we took another step and we looked at what can we do to recruit more people. Included in the curriculum, we have English as a second language, the math skills, writing skills, that type of thing. And we also offer the PSEO program for younger people coming through the program. They can come in and finish their high school degree while they work on their pre-apprenticeship skills. It's a tremendous opportunity for young people that know that they want to get into the trades. And on top of that, if they complete their apprenticeship program as scheduled, take two online courses. Because we are an accredited educational institution, they graduate with an associate's degree. So again, this is no cost to the state. It's about 10 cents an hour for people that are working in the craft. And, you know, there's plenty of good programs out there. We like to boast about our own. And I'd like to invite the chair and any other committee member at the appropriate time, we can get up there and tour this facility. It's actually in Little Canada. So there's a lot to learn about the opportunities in the building trades. No question.
Thank you, Representative Sundin. I think we're working on setting something up once we can actually go out and travel and go to places. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe one of my colleagues has a bill that allows the trades and military in our schools to just communicate with our students. Just for those who are listening, think of that. Some of our schools in the state of Minnesota are not allowing our military and our trade schools and construction trades to come into the schools to expose them for that. We ought to be, well, I'm angry about it, and I know many are. That should be our priority in this committee, is to allow these organizations to be in our schools. How frustrating, how shameful that they are not allowed in some of our schools. Shame. And Mr. Chair, I will certainly work towards changing that. I hope that the bill will seize its way through quickly and that we can discuss it and change that. We can see fully what the ramifications are of not allowing them to be exposed. And I just had to say that I got fired up. I know we're short on time. I thank Mr. George for his testimony and continue to keep up the good work, but let's make that a priority. I will, Mr. Chair. I hope you will too.
All right. Thank you. Representative Teal.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to echo the thanks for this hearing. Listening to Ms. Lewandowski and that program, I'm wondering how much of that is around the state of Minnesota. Are there other programs, other school districts that are areas that are providing that type of training?
Ms. Lewandowski, and I think Superintendent Abraham, you had a chart that showed a map of where it was it by school district?
It is. So thank you, Chair and Representative Peel. The heat maps that we included in the packet that you'll all have will show where students are coming from. It is broken down by county. It seemed to be the easiest to break it down by county on that heat map versus the number of school districts that we have. I am happy to follow up with more information per school district. But one of the things that maybe wasn't clear enough in our presentation is our relationship, for example, with Local 49 for the Operating Engineers Pathway was intentional to do it in an online school so that it was able to reach all students across the state of Minnesota. So school districts, some school districts have certain pipelines and pathways that they have, but it's limited to their school district, or maybe they have shared time agreements with, you know, neighboring districts. But by connecting directly with an industry partner and a virtual school, we have removed that barrier. And so any student can access these courses. They can take them as part of their school day in place of one of their courses or two of their courses. And so it is, those heat maps will show kind of where those students are currently enrolled from and who we are supporting. Thank you.
Representative Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay, so all of the STRIDE, you're the only school district that provides the STRIDE Career Prep Program. So no matter what county you're in, that's where they would work with you on this program, correct?
Ms. Lewandowski, would you answer that?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Keel. Yes, that is correct. So it is through Minnesota Virtual Academy. It's our STRIDE Prep, our STRIDE Career Prep Program, and that's where they would access it through. So students would, just for clarification, for these pathways would enroll in that course through Minnesota Virtual Academy in order to access it through the STRIDE Career Prep Program.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Chair, I'd also like to echo Mr. George. I really appreciate your information about the education of large equipment, the conversation about that. And I have to add a personal note. I can tell you that my neighboring farmers, along with our own farm, really appreciate the women that come to work, whether it's driving a big truck or a combine or whatever. Often they'll say they're really particular and careful. So it's kind of interesting to look at a traditional male career and yet watch women expand in that area. So I, you know, it's pretty fun to run some of that large machinery and you know, it just gives us a challenge. So anyway, along with others, but I just had to put in that I hear from guys all the time, you know, I had this gal come out and run the combine. She did the best job of all. So it finds it interesting. Those are big equipment. So, but yes, Mr. Chair, this is very educational. I hope we can seek to do this. I'm thinking that maybe some of our school districts do not have the ability to recommend to students, because this is where we need to go with a lot of kids that need hands on, and I think this is a wonderful way to encourage education, whether we are in rural Minnesota or in the metro area, to show students opportunity. Thank you,
Representative Sandell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick personal note. I have to say that Mr. George was my teaching assistant at the Humphrey Institute, and I'm proud of him. I'm certainly proud of the work that he's doing for the members of the union, and all of his work is in the traditions of Hubert Humphrey and the dedication he had to working men and women. Jason, it's great to see you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. George. Superintendent Abraham, I also believe on a personal note, you have a former member of the legislature in the Houston High School Hall of Fame.
You're catching me off guard a bit, and that is?
Oh, and that would be, I'll give you a hint, her family farm is just outside of town, and there is a road named after that family.
Jeannie Poppy.
Yes. Yes. The interesting thing about Houston is, in the legislature, it was Representative Jean Poppy, but if you go to Houston, it's Jeannie Poppy, just so you know.
She's Jeannie. She will always be Jeannie, and she is absolutely, we are so proud of her. And what she's accomplished.
So these personal notes we do need to add periodically. So thank you, members. Superintendent Abraham.
One point of clarification, even though the classes are all taught online, They are taught by synchronously by teachers, and so the students do get to have that develop that bond with their teacher that they would in a traditional brick and mortar. It's it really is the best of both worlds. So thank you.
All right. Thank you, everyone. We've got a couple of tasks now before the committee as a result of this hearing, and we are working on our next hearing. We'll be informing you of that. Mr. George, thank you very much. It's always good to hear that the unions are getting involved, and they need to stay involved in training our students. So thank you. And with that, members, meeting is adjourned.